It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys of law, the right advice at the right time. And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us once again. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben. All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, last week we discussed different ways in which one can hold title to real property.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one of the things that we mentioned was that other than title between spouses, which is known in North Carolina as tenants by entirety, probably the most common way in which people own property is, in fact, the title known as tenants in common. This happens when, say, for instance, people, three children, mm-hmm. you know, inherit their parents' property a third, and a third, or two children 50-50.
Right.
Or two people just go together and buy property.
Mm-hmm.
As an investment, and they each put in, you know, 50%, or maybe they put in, you know, one puts in 80%, the other puts in 20%.
Right.
Okay. Now, the deeds on tenants in common property need to be specific as to the ownership,
mm-hmm.
or otherwise we don't know, for instance, with an 80%, 20%, something of that nature. If it's just simply a deed out from a grantor to grantees and it's just three grantees, you know, Jane, Mary, Sue, then we're going to assume that that's a third, a third, and a third.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we lawyers have to be careful when we're preparing tenants in common deeds to be clear as to what the ownership percentage is in each respective grantee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing about owning property as tenants in common is that each owner owns the undivided interest in the property. They, in fact, own a right, if you will, to use, occupy, control the property, even though they only have a third of an mm-hmm. interest, let's say, or
right.
a half of an interest. They own this undivided interest in the whole. And so as one would anticipate, this can create some issues from time to time because maybe you've got one owner that no longer wants to have ownership in the property.
Mm-hmm.
You've got one owner that potentially, you know, is exercising some sort of, you know, exclusive use of the property or attempts to the detriment or exclusion of the other owners.
One's living there.
One's living there and the other two are not. So one can only imagine the issues that can arise with tenants in common property.
I would imagine, Wes, this is where litigation comes into play. Is if you have tenants in common there, one person is maybe living in the inherited property and paying the taxes and doing everything, doing all the maintenance,
right?
And the others are not.
Yeah, it seems like at any given time we have, you know, several of these partition proceedings in
mm-hmm.
order to split up a tenants in common ownership interest proceeding in our office. And, you know, it's pretty common where property is inherited, as Cecil said, maybe a third, a third, a third, or a half, brother, sister, so on and so forth. Or there's maybe some type of business property that's tenants in common and the parties don't see eye to eye. And it's necessary to break up that tenants in common interest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we've talked about on the program before, you know, what you want to do from the outset is try to work it out with your co-owner first,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, if one party can buy out the other party, so on and so forth, then, you know, certainly that can be papered up. That's not a difficult thing to do as long as we come to terms, come to an agreement. But in the event that the parties can't come to an agreement, then there's a relatively efficient way to break up that tenants in common interest. Under our statutes, which is what I just mentioned, a partition proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
It's a proceeding before the clerk of court where the party moving for the partition of the property is either asking for the property to be split out, actually partitioned,
right,
which would normally be in a situation where it's maybe acreage, land, and it can be split out,
mm-hmm.
you know, relatively equally, or in the event that it can't be split out because maybe it's a house or
mm-hmm.
maybe it's something that's improved or it's too small to be subdivided, then there's a process where you kind of default back to a not a partition property of the property, but a sale of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be through private sale, which is basically, you know, selling it to a private individual or listing it with a realtor, or it could be through a public sale, which is more like a foreclosure sale. So, but the idea with regard to all of that is we want to reach the highest and best use of the property. I mean, that is a concept relative to all real property that really permeates everything dealing with real property.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The way that our North Carolina General Assembly and, you know, the common law deals with tenants in common property and that inherent problem, which mm-hmm. could be kind of the deadlock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know how we're going to use the property, who's going to pay the taxes, who's going to pay the insurance. One person's living there to the exclusion of everybody else.
Yeah.
You know,
but you have equal ownership.
Yeah. My sister Sally thinks that because she's lived there when mom and dad were living mm-hmm. and now she's passed away and she really only owns a third of the property, she thinks it's her birthright to mm-hmm. own that property.
Right.
But she's excluding everybody else and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's recognized that that's not the highest and best use of the property, because obviously two out of the three owners in that scenario are not getting the beneficial use of the property.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a relatively, as I indicated, explained, a relatively efficient way to break that up so that, you know, we can find that highest and best use of the property.
Now, are there ways to prevent those conflicts, though?
Well, there are, and that's actually exactly what I was thinking about that I wanted to talk about next. I mean, Ben, owning property, tenants in common, long term is going to beg for these kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the fact, what if a tenants in common owner excuse me, were to die.
Mm-hmm.
And now their one third is divided between their three.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And as we've also discussed on this program, when you go to do out conveyances on the property, say you need to get a mortgage, say you want to sell it, mm-hmm. say you want to develop it, any number of things, you're going to need the signature, believe it or not, of the spouses in the state of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So what Wes and I and the office are going to advise when we see these issues and we know that folks are attempting to own their property for a long time mm-hmm. as tenants in common, they really don't have an intention to sell. Maybe they want to rent it, lease it, develop it. We want them to then, as you would expect, transfer that interest most likely to a limited liability company.
Mm-hmm.
And then within the context of the operating agreement of the limited liability company, there will be, now we have a structure that can talk about, you know, who manages the property, what would be considered a significant decision as to, you know, as to making a decision on the property. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe we want one of the owners
right.
to have the right to make a decision if it doesn't exceed $50,000 or something like that. You also have buy-sell provisions where if any particular owner were to die, you have buyout provisions. And how does the fair market value of the property, how is that determined? And mm-hmm. what would be the terms of the buyout? Is it all cash within 60 days or does the person have the right to finance the property mm-hmm. over time? So in other words, you put a structure in place that will then govern the undivided interest in the property.
So what would be the mm-hmm. heirs of that property now become shareholders in that LLC?
Members in the LLC, and their property, because it's titled in the LLC, is subject to all of the covenants, if you will, restrictions, mm-hmm. guidelines that are in place in that LLC.
Okay, so then mm-hmm. if that would all be handled, or the LLC would be created by the will?
No, not
or,
you.
Or
I mean,
begins with the will.
Correct. It begins with First of all, moms and dads who know that they have a valuable piece of property that they want to pass on to their children, mm-hmm. in divided interest may create the LLC while they're still living, mm-hmm. to put the property into this structure, if you will, with appropriate, guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, in their will, they would leave the membership interest in the LLC a third, a third, and a third.
Gotcha.
Okay. If they structure it that way, they also could leave a membership interest, a voting interest, you know, to one particular child and put mm-hmm. them in control, but have the ownership on the balance sheet divided by three different children. But that would be the way that it might play in an estate context. Mm-hmm. What we see often, though, is that the parents maybe didn't ever get around to setting up the property in an LLC. They mm-hmm. just own it. It's now owned by several children, and the children decide to place the property in an LLC. So they would be the ones now to create it and to put the restrictions in place, the guidelines.
Okay. Well, there's more to come in just a moment. If you have questions, you'd like to call in and ask your questions, you can do so at 800-818-2255 are these local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
More with Harvell and Collins and Let's Talk Legal right after this. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. And we're talking about owning property and tenants in common property, especially when it's been inherited. There's some pitfalls out there, too.
Well, there really are. Long term, we are not, lawyers are not going to be terribly comfortable with folks continuing to own property, tenants in common, just on and on and into succeeding generations, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, of course, with that said, I'll let Wes talk a little bit about some of the lurking liability issues, and they come at this situation from different angles.
Right.
One of the angles, and I am going to let Wes talk about this, but one of the angles is just that suppose one of the tenants in common interest holders, one of the thirds, mm-hmm. has a judgment against mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, and in other words, liability issues with this.
Right. So, yeah, if you have one of the tenants in common owners who have, some liability relative to a judgment, then their particular tenants in common interest would be subject to that judgment. What mm-hmm. I mean by that is that the judgment would attach.
Right.
I mean, normally, if you go to court, you win your case, you get a judgment, that acts as an automatic lien on the real property of wherever the judgment's been docketed or wherever mm-hmm. it's been, if it's, Carteret County, then the judgment's in Carteret County. If it's Carteret County property, then it attaches as a lien mm-hmm. to any real property in Carteret County. And it also can be filed in other jurisdictions where there's other real property. So that's kind of a side issue. But still, and that judgment creditor could also force the sale of just that one-third interest. Can't force the sale of all the property, but that kind of creates some issues as well because, who wants this other one-third owner
mm-hmm. right.
involved in our property.
Exactly.
In the event that the real property is held in an LLC, like we were talking about before,
mm-hmm.
and this individual who would otherwise be a tenants in common owner has a judgment against them, then, there's really nothing there to attach other than the membership interest. And that becomes a lot more difficult for any judgment creditor to attempt to collect from.
Mm-hmm.
You have to basically go through a multi-step process and get what's called a charging order and, try to get disbursements to pay on your judgment in the event that there are disbursements to the other members, which in many cases, if we're talking about like the beach house,
right.
we're talking about, just general property that was inherited, there never are disbursements.
Mm-hmm.
So the judgment creditor doesn't get anything. I know we're kind of down in the weeds with regard to this, but that is something that's important to take into consideration. Also, if you contrast that to a tenants by entirety ownership,
mm-hmm.
In the event that a judgment creditor, has a judgment against either husband or wife, well, there's no effect at all on the tenant's by entirety property.
Oh, really? Okay.
You can't, that lien doesn't attach to either the ownership of the husband or wife if it's tenants by entirety property. See, the law protects, you know, the strength of ownership of real property that mm-hmm. is that marital interest tenants by entirety.
So if somebody owns tenants in common with right of survivorship, does it still attach then?
If you're talking, it's called joint tenants with right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe because that's a good question. Yeah. The reason why is because you don't see it quite as often.
Well, the reason I'm asking that is my son and his now wife bought their house before they were married with the right of survivorship.
Okay, so their deed probably states joint tenants with right of survivorship.
Right.
Now, my recollection without doing the research is that it only attaches to it would attach, but only attach to the one owner, of course. It'd be treated like a tenants in common situation.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you add on the joint tenants and the right of survivorship part of it doesn't mean that that puts it in the category of being like a marital, type interest.
Okay.
So that's my recollection.
They might need a retitle.
I'll go back and look at it and, you know, it's probably been a year since I've had one just like that. So it's just not something that you see quite as often because there's no question.
Well, more and more people are buying property together without being married. So,
well, that's true. So. And many times they make the mistake of not thinking about it and they set it up tenants in common. And then all of a sudden the relationship falls apart. And then you're in a situation where you've got one paying the mortgage. The other one's not paying the mortgage. They both own the property. And then they're sitting across the table from me and we're trying to unwind all this stuff.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, have some conversation about this before you, you know, go down that path, you know, with an attorney who can help you come up with the right plan. You know, the other thing that we talk about with regard to these different types of concurrent ownership interests in property, which again, there's three really in North Carolina, tenants by entirety, which is the marital interest, tenants in common, which is just, you know, a third, basically interest. And then joint tenants with the right of survivorship is that right of survivorship. Because what that means is that whoever the survivors are who own the property get the property.
Right.
They receive whatever is left over.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if the property is joint tenants with right of survivorship among three and one dies, then it's all of a sudden 50-50 among the two.
Gotcha.
Okay. Pretty standard. But that joint tenants with right of survivorship only applies to, or the right of survivorship only applies to a deed that says joint tenants with right of survivorship and has to specifically expressly state that or tenants by entirety property. And the tenants by entirety is the marital interest. Now, if you have a husband and wife who have tenants by entirety property and they keep the property after a divorce, then it automatically reverts to a tenants in common interest.
Yeah.
Doesn't stay as tenants by entirety.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you have a husband and wife that happened to on their deed indicate that it was joint tenants with right of survivorship, divorce does not sever that right of survivorship and it continues to pass, you know, through right of survivorship. So, you know, a couple other things that we can mention is that, you know, when you compare a will, for example, to a deed in dealing with real property, big difference there.
All right. Well, hold on to that. We'll get to that right after this break here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station every Tuesday morning. Bring you the answers that you're looking for, perhaps in your civil legal life. And you can call with your questions, too, at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back again to Let's Talk Legal. Now, Wes, as you were mentioning, that this is a you get into something different here with a conveyance, right, of deeds and wills.
Right. You know, if you're talking about, you know, wanting to convey property to someone upon your death, well, if you do that through your will, then obviously you have the right to change that anytime you want to, as long as you're competent to do so, have the capacity to enter a new will. You can do that anytime, obviously, before your death.
Mm-hmm.
You can change your will. You know, I leave Blackacre to, you know, whomever, and you can change it. And that you keep complete control of the property. But in the event that what you sign is a deed, and you're conveying, let's say, the remainder interest. We haven't even talked about that yet, mm-hmm. but that is, I convey my remainder interest in this real property to so-and-so, and I retain a life estate. Mm-hmm. Well, that means that you have the right to live there. You have the right to possession. Tax bill's still going to come in your name. But then upon your death, the property is then going to all go to this person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can, if you change your mind, decide, I'm just going to take that back away from that person.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a vested interest in real property that is now passed to this person. It's alienable. It could be sold. The person
right.
could even sell the remainder interest
right.
if they want to. So same thing with any other kind of deed. You know, once you convey that interest, whether it be a tenants in common interest, a joint tenant with right of survivorship interest, and that deed is signed, then it is a done deal unless the person who's received the interest is willing to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, a lot of other things, I keep saying the other thing. There's always other things.
That's right, yeah. It's always another road to follow.
One little fact can so dramatically change the consequences, the result
mm-hmm.
in files such as this. This is one of the reasons we're discussing these real property titles, because there are just so many permutations here.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, with regard to a will, you know, once a will gets signed, there's no requirement for that to be put on record for it
right.
to be good. So you mm-hmm. really don't know. You can't go to the courthouse and look up
and
the
look
will
ahead of time
and see what's going on. Where's dad leaving his property?
Yeah.
Where's my uncle leaving the property? You can't really do that because it's not public record. Now, with regard to a deed, well, a gift deed could be signed and held for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really don't know what that deed says either, but
oh, really?
It has to be recorded within 2 years.
Okay.
If it's not recorded within that 2 year period of time, then it becomes a void.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't convey, you know, the interest.
But that leaves a lot of things for surprise. And
it does leave a lot of things for surprise, but you know, in the event that the deed was recorded, then mm-hmm. obviously we see exactly, mm-hmm. you know, what has transpired with regard to that. And we can, you know, learn more about what the person has done with the respective real property. So again, the overall overarching concept there is that if you're in a situation where you're making decisions about where you want real property to be left, if you do it by deed,
mm-hmm.
then you lose control over what is eventually going to happen with the property because the decision has been made. It can't be changed.
Right.
If you do it through, you know, a will, then obviously you can change that at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my perspective on all this is all very much skewed because I'm the guy who handles the litigation and I'm the guy who deals with all these cases.
Right.
Where so-and-so signed this deed where he or she was in bad shape and didn't know what he or she was doing and died 2 days later and it got slipped in front of them. And here we go off into litigation world.
Yeah.
To the litigation world. So, you know, I see the good and the bad, and I also see the cases where, you know, the will was put in front of the person right before he or she died,
but
too.
So. As always, the conversations that you can have early on can prevent all these things.
That's correct.
So, once again, if you want to find out more about that, you want to contact the folks at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, harvellandcollins.com, 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. And you can listen to past shows, too, at harvellandcollins.com.